Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast. This is another episode of our coverage of the 2022-23 season. I'm your host, Gage, as usual, and we are back again, coming to you now on Super Bowl Sunday. Not that I especially care, but that is what day it is. One thing I do care about, however, is the fact that I'm joined by, as you may all remember from last week's episode, my newly appointed Valentine in the shape of Reese. Hello, Reese.
Hello.
We're also joined by Ethan. Ethan, glad to have you here.
Good to be here. Good to see you again.
And of course, fresh off the back of a Sunday road trip, actually, Josh has arrived on the scene. How was the drive, Josh?
It wasn't too bad. Like, for the most part, it wasn't too congested. New Brunswick's been awful the last, like, 8 months, so.
Now that they finally fixed Waco, I feel like it's a little better, at least.
Makes it a lot better now that Waco is not a walking trash can of a place.
It's still that. It just has better roads.
True. And the Flyers just lost, so.
Well, isn't that sad? What a sad day for the city of Philadelphia. Too bad
they're in
the Super
Bowl.
Yeah, I know. But
all right, Josh doesn't ask you how you are anymore.
Well, to be fair, I didn't ask him how he was just a minute ago.
Yeah, he didn't.
I just asked how the drive was, but you didn't ask me that last week.
Didn't happen last week. That's why I bring it up.
Didn't you also ask about? I was also thinking about question of the day last week. I was not prepared in the slightest.
I can't remember what I asked. I don't know. It probably was something dumb. But the good news is,
I think you just asked him how he was doing, and then he was like talking about what he just did before the podcast. It was like scarf his food and everything.
Oh yeah.
I got home like 10 minutes or 15 minutes before we started recording, so I had to like make my dinner real quick, throw it in the oven, eat some vegetables. I think I had a salad or two, and then I like was scarfing my pizza down, trying to finish before we started, and somehow did.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Well, you have an opportunity to redeem yourself with question of the day. Not that it was bad last week, but
what even was it last week?
Pizza topping.
Pizza topping.
That was fair. I made pizza. Okay. Yeah. So I would ask who's going to win the Super Bowl, but I think that is just has no.
I couldn't tell you who's playing in the Super Bowl.
I know. It has almost zero depth of conversation in this world. So I went to Bucky's this afternoon. I didn't spend a lot of time in there because I was trying to get home, but I wanted lunch. When you go to Bucky's and you're getting food, what is your go-to Bucky's like order? Not order, but like what do you get?
I've never ordered food from Bucky's except on a band trip, and it was like a sausage thing.
The sausage on a stick thing?
No, it was like a breakfast sandwich, and it was okay, and I don't remember it very well. I've heard from Ethan, though. I'll just let you answer, because I heard something, which I imagine is your answer.
I have had the sausage on a stick before, and it is really good, but I went recently and I found out that they have a chicken sandwich of them like themselves.
It's good.
It's good. It is good.
It is. Their club is also really good. It's got like turkey, ham, bacon, some sun-dried tomatoes.
No, but I did like the chicken sandwich. And then I know they've got good like beaver chips and stuff like that, but I'll usually just get a sandwich and then maybe like some like non-Bucky's related snack. And then I love their, I think it's a cherry limeade or like icy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've only ever gotten one actual food item from Bucky's ever, and it was their pulled pork sandwich, which was pretty good. I mean, it was about as good as you could expect from barbecue from Bucky's. But
That's what I had today. I hadn't had it in a while.
Yeah, the sauce is really good. They sauce it up nice. But
I passed two on the way down between Fort Worth and San Antonio. So it's kind of it's an easy picking.
I'm just saying.
Temple. I was like, what's the other one? I know there's one in New Braunfels, but
there is. I was, you know, I think this was when I went to take Gage's grad photos, and leaving Waco, there's just so many signs for Bucky's. Like I was counting them with my grandpa. There was like 25.
Yeah.
Just it's like wild. Leaving Waco.
Like whenever you get close to a Bucky's, they just like mass advertise everything.
It's just ridiculous. But
I know there's one when you're going towards Waco, it's like right before, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe it's right south of Hillsboro a little bit. It's like before you get to Waco, but the Buc-ee's is obviously quite a bit further south than Waco. But they, I feel like they might have done this on purpose, but it says Buc-ee's 69 miles. And I'm like, who decided to put that sign there? Like, dude, who made that decision?
So my fiance's older sister has her master's in marketing and like was tried to interview for Buc-ee's on their like marketing team. And part of it, you would have to work in like every shop within a Buc-ee's before you got hired. It's like a 3-week process where you work there like 5 days a week. And just knowing her, that's just having the, I would go and watch her be the meat man for a day. I would take so much joy out of hearing her have to scream like fresh hot brisket on the board. And I think like I would take so much pleasure watching so many people have to scream that all day if I knew them. Speaking of fresh hot brisket on the board, that's what I normally get. I normally get like their sliced brisket sandwich and like a bottle of water. They got the big like liter bottle of water.
That's good. I feel like I'm missing out. I just don't ever go to Buc-ee's.
Don't y'all have one like 5 minutes away?
Yeah, I just don't go.
They got good breakfast burritos. They have called the Hippo. It's like a sausage, egg, and cheese one. It's also got hash browns and like a really good like green salsa.
I just feel like the monster one.
I know their food's good, but like if I want to get food, there's like actual restaurants close by instead of a gas station restaurant.
Is Buc-ee's count as an actual like fast food restaurant at this point? Surely they have.
I think Buc-ee's is in its own category. Like it's not really a gas. I mean, it is a gas station, but it's not really. Like it's just an experience.
Yeah,
Buc-ee's is just a cultural phenomenon.
When I went to St. Louis this summer, they literally like there's this new place called Wally's, which was just like a new version of Buc-ee's. There was like two in Illinois and one in Missouri. It was such a weird.
They should have called it By and Large instead of Wally's, like the actual store from Wally. You know, they have the blimp and stuff. No,
okay. I don't remember the store. It's a great reference.
It's like the reason everyone's fat in Wally is because By and Large sells them all the food and they drink their hamburgers out of cups and stuff.
They were just fat because they didn't walk.
Well, partially, yeah, but also because they eat a bunch of dog shit, like cardboard hamburgers and stuff.
I need to watch that again.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
That's a good movie. When I was little, I didn't like it because it was so sad.
I feel like it gets sadder as you get older.
Yeah.
Like, cause you realize what it actually is. Like,
yeah.
Cause when you're a kid, you don't really understand the whole message. But as you get older, you like kind of start to put it together. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move along now to discuss some Premier League action
Oh, speaking of hot garbage on earth, Chelsea didn't win again this weekend.
Yes, except for I'm not one to have sympathy for Chelsea at all, but PGMOL did come out with a bunch of decisions that they got wrong this weekend, and one of them was that Souček handball in the game because he literally was just playing goalkeeper and it somehow didn't get given. So
I don't feel bad. The Thiago Silva bullshit when he like swiped the ball with his hand, I don't care.
Oh, I don't feel bad. I don't have sympathy at all, but I'm just saying.
I have a little bit of sympathy. That is awful.
It's pretty bad. It's a bad decision, but it's Chelsea.
It's bad, so they've had stuff go their way so many times.
I forget who. I also think it's funny that Emerson Palmieri, one of these random lone army players that they've had on the books for 1,000 years and finally sold to West Ham, scores against them. And I was wondering, because, you know, sometimes players do this thing where they don't celebrate against their former clubs, but I don't think I've ever seen a former Chelsea player not celebrate because there is no love lost between Chelsea and the way they treat their players. So I was happy to see him go apeshit when he scored.
I'm curious because I've never actually looked at these lists. How many decisions were wrong just this weekend?
I think it was five.
It was a lot.
I think there were five decisions on the list. The Brentford goal was one of them, by the way.
Okay.
And there were, I can't remember the other ones, but I think it was five. And it was all this weekend. They were all just, they came out and said, yeah, these decisions were wrong. Oh, the other one was Estupiñán's goal against Palace. It got ruled out for offside. And they said in the statement that the lines were drawn incorrectly, which I don't understand how that's possible because it's a computer.
I drew the lines.
But what's the point of VAR if we're just going to delay? All it is now it's delaying the human error by 3 minutes. That's all it's doing. Yeah. Like, because the whole point is to reduce human error, but it's not even doing that. It's just making it take longer. So I don't
know. Harvey Barnes' disallowment was so disappointing because it was literally his big toe.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It should have been 5-1.
Easily. It should have. Like, yeah. And there were chances to make it even more, but like the big toe being offside, I was like, okay, I'm not upset because we're up by two, but like, come on.
The funny thing is, I went to the pub again to watch the game, and I went to the bathroom like during the VAR review because I knew it was going to take 1,000 years, and they disallowed the goal right before I came back out of the bathroom, and everyone was like, go back in the bathroom. So maybe I should have stayed in the bathroom. Our fortune
probably should have, because we scored like 3 minutes late.
I know.
That's such a vibe check to literally go the first time and beat City and then go the second time and get fucking routed by Leicester.
Tottenham is vibe check FC, so I'm so used to it at this point.
I think y'all's Twitter admin cursed y'all because they tweeted something about like this is the highest scoring fixture in Premier League history or something like that. And
well, I cursed us too last week because I said we always destroy Leicester, which is true, but it's like
very
so
true.
Well, the Twitter admin should have been more specific with who was scoring the goals.
Yeah. So I did think that was funny. It could have easily been 5-1. And the funny thing is, I guess this is a segue into this game because I don't really care about Chelsea that much. And I just think it's funny that they can't win a game in spite of spending the GDP of Iraq or I think someone said the defense budget of Iraq. anyway, the funny thing about this performance is that like 10 minutes into the game, Spurs actually played all right for the first 10 minutes, but then, you know, we take the lead through an accidental goal. Like our best chance of the game that ended up being a goal was an accident. The rest, like, I don't think we had another good chance outside of the shot that happened in like the first 30 seconds. I don't think we had another good chance the entire game.
Dude, that Christensen clearance on the corner before.
I know. And then he immediately clears it straight into Benteker on the next corner. Couldn't win for losing, but except for, actually, our best chance of the game was when Castagna rounded his own keeper and almost scored on himself.
That was so bad. When he kicked it, I was like, you have got to be kidding me.
Well, because Danny Ward came out of the area because I think he was – I don't know what he was doing. And then, like, they both just bumbled it between each other. And, yeah, it was –
I ask that question a lot about what he's doing. He makes lots of interesting decisions.
Well, there was a lot of interesting goalkeeping in this game because – I think all the Lloris haters are about to get vibe checked because Fraser Forster is an okay goalkeeper, but oh my God, he's got to be the slowest diving goalkeeper I've ever seen, which he's 6'8". So it makes sense. But like for two of the Leicester goals, I feel like the ball was in the net before he started diving. Like, I don't know. Like they were good finishes. So I don't know if he would have gotten there anyway, but it's just the reaction time is just not there.
My most recent memory of him is having a worldie against us for no reason.
I think someone on Twitter too posted, because whenever Celtic played Barca in the Champions League and they drew 1-1 or something, Messi said their goalkeeper Forster was superhuman or something like that. And I can't remember if it was the official Spurs account that tweeted that out or if it was like some tangential one, but they tweeted that out, and I was like, guys, you're just begging.
Fraser Forster has the YouTube channel, right? Or is that
Ben Foster.
Ben Foster, okay.
Yeah, he's retired now. He also used to put in worldies against Spurs, though. He was actually a Spurs fan growing up, so a lot of people on Twitter were saying we should sign him as a free agent because Lloris is injured. But
yeah, I was a bit confused.
Worldies, that man plays Mendy goal was insane.
Yeah.
The second goal of his career is also insane.
Yeah, it was a great goal. Like when that went in, everyone in the pub was just like, "Oh, Like, what do you do about that? There's not much you could do.
Well, I saw him like winding up for it, and I was like, there's no way. This is either getting blocked or going into row Z.
It should have been blocked too, because Perisic was running up to stand him down, and then he stopped halfway between the goal and him and like turned his back. It's like, what is he doing?
I think outside of that interesting play, Perisic had a really good game. Like, Tete was invisible for most of the game.
Yeah, maybe. I actually think Ben Davis was more responsible for the defensive side of things, because, well, maybe I was just caught up on the fact that Perisic could not complete a cross challenge.
Going forward, it was rough, but, you know, I thought defending, he at least helped a little bit more. I do think if Romero was playing, this would have been a draw.
Yeah. I think you cannot have I don't understand the decision to start. Okay, I understand why we started Porro, even though Emerson had a really good game against City. I understand why Porro starts this game, but he is obviously less defensively sound than Emerson. Like, that's been a known quantity, like when he signed. So why then would you also start in place of Romero, the less defensively sound of the two options, in Tanganga, who's not as good of a defender as he is a ball player, when Sanchez... What's that?
Who do y'all have in the league next week?
West Ham, I think.
I feel like that would have been
Milan
a bad...
on Wednesday.
Yeah, I feel like that would have been a bad play to play Emerson for 60 minutes, sub him off, and then he'd be fine to start, and then you just start Pedro Porro on against West Ham.
Yeah. Yeah, well, also, I think Porro makes more sense in the Champions League, too. So, I don't – because Romero's going to be back, and yeah. – I don't know. So, especially now, because we've gone from, oh my God, this, like, so we've gone from everyone was healthy a week ago after the City game, and then bang, Lloris knee injury, bang, Bissouma surgery, bang, Sessegnon hamstring injury, bang, Rodrigo Bentancur out 6 months with an ACL tear. Like, it just boom, 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 boom. Everything is falling into place, except the opposite of that. Everything is falling out of place.
I was really happy to see Pereira come back this game.
I noticed that, yeah.
Because we dropped like a video this week of like him and you in the full uniform being like, oh, guess who's back? And then I was happy to see him play. And he didn't look bad either. He was playing like a weird point of the game, but also was still playing really well. I will say, yeah. Sutar had Kane in his pocket for the vast majority of the game.
He did play really well. Kane was not getting helped by the midfield,
no.
But yeah, Sutar did have a very good game. Leicester also had a really good way of managing their tactical fouls, because I think like seven Leicester players ended the game on a yellow card, but it's just like each different player took a tactical foul at a different time. So
yeah,
it just worked out that way.
I do like how we changed how we normally try to go like, stand up like chest to chest against y'all. I don't feel like we did that until we were like in firm control of the game. We have not played long balls as like our main like attacking structure in probably since the title or when Ranieri left. And even then, if you can barely count that as trying to play long balls, because that's just not what we've been like structured to do. So I was really interested. That was just kind of weird to see a Leicester team do that. But I think it worked really well, especially against Tottenham. I don't know how well it would actually work against, like, the rest of the league, just because that – no, y'all are – outside of, like, City and Liverpool, y'all are really the only ones who sit back and keep a whole lot of possession and, like, are very patient going forward. Patient going – or I don't know if patient's the right word, but just, like, wary of going forward. Like, y'all want, like, the perfect system to go forward, which I think played, like, right into what Rodgers was trying to do this week.
Yeah, and also I think this – I have to give credit to Rodgers on this one as well, because he definitely was doing his homework on the City game, because Spurs have this new idea of Eric Dier pushing forward into midfield out of the center of defense, and it leaves Tanganga and Davis quite wide, so there's a lot of space open down the middle when he does that. And so then – Rodgers basically just told Iheanacho to stand there and occupy that space, I think, and it worked. I mean, it led to two of the goals, the one right before halftime, and then the 2v1 as well.
Then it, and then it left all like the inverted runs. It left Dyer having to chase to try and cover down for Tanganga or Davies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's the majority. And I don't have anything else. That was kind of the. We do have an awful run of form, run of games. We have United and then Arsenal the week after. So,
well, you said you were expecting 1 point. You already tripled that. So
I'm mildly content. I would love to like draw United and then lose against Arsenal. I'd be content with that.
Die.
I would love to beat Arsenal. I don't think it's going to happen.
Hey, you could get a point though.
We are dropping
points a lot.
Yeah, but also I feel like if y'all are dropping points a lot, y'all are going to like steady the ship at some point.
And by a lot, I mean two games, but it's a lot. It's a lot.
Surely y'all steady the ship at some point. I think that's bound to happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice segue.
I actually still back us to beat City, to be completely honest.
It depends how much Pep plays Tinkerball, to be honest. If he decides to Pep roulette with the starting 11, then I think Arsenal have a pretty good chance. But if he decides to just stick with what worked from today, then, you know, I don't know.
I know that in the Villa game today against City, or City played against Villa, that they took Haaland off at halftime. I don't know if that was injury related or.
Well, they do have Champions League midweek, so it might, since they were winning 3-0, it might have been fitness.
They do? I thought they had Champions League midweek next week. Don't they have Arsenal on Wednesday?
You're so right. Well, they have Arsenal.
I'm pretty sure they were just resting him.
Because I would imagine.
I think the commentator said something about it.
Yeah, I would imagine that he was pretty bruised after the Romero challenges.
It says he was Alvarez replaced Haaland because of an injury.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think tactically it's actually a decent matchup for us because the teams we've been struggling against recently have just been extremely sound defensively and heavily reliant on the counterattack, which is just not what City does. Especially this season, they haven't really been that great defensively. They've had a lot of weird defensive changes too. I know Ruben Diaz is back now from whatever was keeping him out of the team, but
I think they've struggled to find the center back pairing that at least Pep believes is the 100% right fit.
Yeah,
I think, I don't know, I feel like they're in a weird middle ground where like certain players are leaving their prime and they're trying to see if other players coming in are going to enter their prime and like be a City level player or just like flounder and be like John Stones level for like in and out of the team, good every once in a while, but not amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll talk about the Brentford game and stop speculating about the City game. Wait for that to happen, I guess. But ended 1-1. We already talked about the weird decision not checking the offside in Brentford's goal. It's not really anything to add to that. It's just what happened. But Brentford did play really well. And they probably deserved something out of the game, to be completely honest. So I'm not actually that heartbroken about it, even though it did come from a refereeing mistake. It's disappointing to drop points, but at the end of the day, I mean, the context is greater, but at the end of the day, nothing has changed about Wednesday. We need to win the Wednesday game no matter what, even if we had won this game, just for security purposes. We need to win it now more, because I think if we lose, even though we have a game in hand, we will technically be behind on goal difference. But, if we want to win the title, we have to win the game. That's just how it is. So nothing's really changed on that front. Yeah, it was kind of similar to Everton where we just couldn't really get anything going. And I think I have an answer to why, maybe slightly. And it goes into something you asked me, Gage, a couple weeks ago, which was or maybe Josh asked me, or it was one of y'all. Maybe it was Ethan, actually. I don't remember. It was asking me if I could foresee Trossard starting. And I said no, but I think I've changed my mind, not because I think Martinelli is playing poorly, but Martinelli definitely plays way better when his strike partner is Jesus. When it's Nketiah, he loses certain aspects of his game that I think we're lacking right now. And we saw it in this game because Trossard came on and pretty much immediately scored.
It was like his third touch or something, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and it was from a position that Martinelli, when Jesus is playing, is in all the time. But since it's been Nketiah, he's just not really, I don't know, something's changed. I think it's the fluidity maybe, because Jesus and Martinelli swapped a lot. Martinelli would drift inside, Jesus would go out wide. Nketiah kind of does that, but he's just not as good at it as Jesus, which is fair. I mean, that's just Jesus was used as a winger for a long time. Nketiah's pretty much always played striker. So I think that's partly why we've had some issues in the scoring, because the Nketiah-Martinelli mixture is a little weird. I'm very interested to see the lineup on Wednesday. I think Trossard could get the start over Martinelli. But also, Martinelli's been starting pretty much the whole season. We're still in first. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, even though I think it's cracking at least. But yeah, I think, as far as the scoreline goes, Brentford were really great in this game. The commentators said it, and it's the classic trope, right? They said it's a game of chess, but it really was. I really like
Thomas Frank.
Yes, Thomas Frank. Thank you. I really like him as a manager, especially with his tactics. And obviously, I like Arteta and his tactics. So it literally was just... it took a while for anyone to get on the score sheet. The Trossard goal was the opening goal. But yeah, it was just a battle of tactics in this game. And yeah, it was really fun to watch, even though it was a draw.
All right. That game on Sunday, today is Sunday. That game on Wednesday has the potential. This is a super cliche, and there's a lot of football left to be played, but it feels like one of these title decider games. Like, Not in terms of points itself, because obviously even if Arsenal do lose, they still have a game in hand, so it is still in their hands. But for a momentum aspect as well, I think it's such a huge yeah. Like swing point, you know?
It's huge for momentum, because if City win, like I said, they'll be ahead on goal difference. And we have a game in hand, but now the pressure is super on us, which is what happened last season, right? We had a game in hand on Tottenham for a while. And it just didn't matter because there was just too much pressure with falling behind. And now it's even more pressure because, you know, it's for the title now. It's not just for top four. So there's just more around it. And City, I think, too, you know, they if they go in first, even with us having a game in hand, they'll just run away and they won't drop another point for the whole season. I think similarly, if we can beat City, it will be the response we've been needing from these last two games. And I could see us, I wouldn't say we won't drop another point, but I could see us turning around that drop in form and seeing out the season pretty much.
All right, let's keep moving along. Interestingly enough, you know, usually we try to do this chronologically, but I mean, all the Slap clubs actually were playing at the exact same time. So we're just in the blender in terms of chronology here. But Ethan, we're going to come on to you now for what appears to the naked eye to be a circus of a game. I don't know if you feel kind of similarly, but
I can only describe this game as something that was really funny and something that was also not funny at all. Because, you know, the first thing I do when I wake up, check the lineup, obviously. I think we all do that. What the hell? What the hell was that? Not only do I see Schlupp starting, I see Tompkins back in the team again. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Literally, we've been playing the Gahey-Richards combination, and then somehow Richards is just not even in the team. So I'm just like, oh gosh, this is my, like, end game. Like, I'm about to die. this club is killing me. We're playing Brighton today. They're in good form. All is lost. And it looked that way for about a good chunk of the match because, you know, we've already had to deal with so many injuries. So we were already just, you know, lacking a lot of our talent in this game to go on and win. But they were cruising for a majority of the game. And I think, you know, going back to that VAR decision, I think we definitely got lucky with that getting overturned because I thought it was just a really good move by them. And it just happened to be, you know, so close to where it would have stayed anyway. But it was just weird with that decision. But and the weird thing that happened was that I didn't think we were going to score at all, but somehow we were able to launch a free kick right at Robert Sanchez, who usually doesn't make a mistake, and somehow let it bounce this one time, and Tompkins of all people puts it in. So that just means Vieira is going to start him even when Anderson is back. So yeah, I don't understand. So we definitely should have got cooked because they had like, you know, 7 shots on target and we only had 25% possession. But, you know, I'll obviously take the point considering, you know, with the rough couple of fixtures we've had and, you know, just how good they're doing right now, I'll take it. But it's just, it was super embarrassing because, you know, in the past it's always been close and, you know, they haven't beaten us since 2019. So it's just a mess at the moment. I mean, we just got to hope that our players come back soon and hopefully Vieira can start starting the right lineup, because, you know, we still have the likes of Ezzy and Edouard on the bench. Revisiting what I mentioned last week, I've about had it with Mateta, because I mean, I was so loud and Reese might have heard it, but he had like so many chances in front of goal just to where he was moving so slow to where it would easily get blocked, and at one point I yelled just shoot the damn ball or something like that so loud. And so I might have woken up some roommates with that, but yeah, we need to bring in more attacking players. I mean, we need to bring it players in every position. So that's just something we need to consider.
Well, summer. It doesn't matter who you bring in. Schlupp's still going to start, right?
Yeah. I guess the only way to make sure that doesn't happen is
midfielders and Schlupp's still starting.
I know. I guess the only way to deal with that is to sacrifice Schlupp to the gods or something like that. But I don't know. I mean, we still got a rough few fixtures coming up. I mean, we got Brentford next, which is, you know, they're on, I think it's a 10-game unbeaten streak right now.
I think it's 9 after the Arsenal.
9? Okay. So, you know, they got that going for them, and it's at home or at home for them. So, and then I think we've got City and Arsenal next to each other. So it's just, it's a tough time. And I'm hoping that we can just get these games over with. And I think this is a good time for like Anderson and Zaha to be out, because, you know, when we get them back, it'll be against the games that we should win. So yeah, hopefully we can ride the storm.
One other game that did take place at the same time here and is pretty important to note for a couple of different reasons is Wolves picking up a 2-1 win at St. Mary's when they were down to 10 men for most of the game after Mario Lemina received a second yellow. Received two yellows in the span of 2 minutes for a challenge and then for dissent, being sent off in the 27th minute. Wolves rallied back after a comical own goal from Jan Bednarek, who spent the first part of the season on loan at Aston Villa.
And didn't start at all.
Yeah, which is a super random transfer. And then new signing João Gomes picking up the winner in the 87th minute. But what it means for Southampton is that Nathan Jones has been sacked. Or shot, if you're Ethan, from a couple weeks ago. So Southampton are doing their best impression of Watford, as it would seem, going through as many managers as possible during the season and probably still getting relegated at the end.
It's just one of those things where it's like you can bring in however managers you want. You cannot fix some things. Like, I mean, we talked about it like a long time ago, but like, a good team should have a good combination of like young players and like some experience, but they have like no experience right now. Well, and if the experience I do have is just not good enough.
The timing couldn't be worse because they really just need Sean Dyche.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why they didn't. Well, maybe they did try to appoint him and Sean Dyche didn't want to go to Southampton.
That's always a possibility, but I feel like, I don't know.
I did see that odds on favorite for the job is actually Jesse Marsh. So that would be kind of an interesting appointment. I mean, he did keep Leeds up last season, but to be honest, I think Southampton are pretty much nailed on to go down.
I wouldn't hate that if he get if they keep him through the championship, but if they end up like second in May, I think that'd be a really terrible appointment.
You know, I think that's actually a very salient point that they need to make an appointment given the turnover that they've had in the past 6 months. They need to make an appointment that is ambitious enough that it could keep them up, but also someone that they could hold on to in the event of their relegation, which now looks more and more likely. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that they need to consider with that appointment. And I actually agree that I think Jesse Marsh is a totally viable option for that.
I think this weekend in general with relegation, I think it put a gap there that hasn't been there all season, at least between like the bottom, what is it, four? Depending on how like if Everton can scrap a result tomorrow, it feels like there's at least a small gap between the bottom five teams, which I guess normally happens this time of year, but it does feel like there's a gap that hasn't been there.
Especially you just know Everton's going to win that game too. With Sean Dyche and Liverpool being so bad.
I hate that. I hate that Everton are going to be doing good now. It's so annoying.
Yeah,
they deserve to go down.
Okay, let's do this. Predictions for relegation. At this stage in the season, who do we think is going to end up going down? I think all of us will probably say Southampton, right? Because they're in trouble. The other two spots are a little bit up in the air, although
I'll still go with Bournemouth.
I think I will too.
Just to do something different, I think Leeds will be the 8th and 19th place team.
I think Leeds will be 18th. I think Everton gets out.
I also kind of think Everton's going to get out.
I think they are too. So I guess that, well, Wolves have been awful.
I don't know. Their past few games,
they've recently been okay.
Yeah.
They were so bad at the start of the season.
Well, they were, but I mean, since bringing in Lopetegui, they've had kind of a tough start to life under him. But since the system's become implemented, I think they're maybe in at least they're on an upward trajectory, which they haven't been able to say for a while. So,
yeah.
Who was there? Did they sack Bruno Lage in the middle of this season, or did they sack him at the beginning of the season?
The middle.
Is he the first one?
I think they hired Lopetegui like right before the World Cup.
Right before World Cup.
Okay, so. I just couldn't remember if it was Lage or if he started the someone season else.
As Lage.
Okay, yeah.
Or they started the season with Lage. He started as Lage.
And then he transformed into Lopetegui.
Yeah. I mean, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of agree. I think Dark Horse to go down, actually, even though their points total is all right now, I kind of think Forest still might be a Dark Horse to go down.
Yeah.
Just because they,
like, fall apart.
I don't ever, like, anytime I see them up against someone on the fixture list, I feel like I never bet on them to win. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. I feel like I always give the other team a better shot for some reason, just mentally. I don't know. And just goes back to that whole transfer thing. I mean, they're doing better than I would have expected, but, you know, them and Chelsea have both had these struggles of betting in 35 new signings, as, you know, everyone would have predicted. So I do think that the continuation of that challenge is going to be one that they'll have to overcome throughout the season, and only time will tell if they'll be capable of doing that. So I think we all ended up with the same three teams, though, actually. Southampton, Bournemouth, and Leeds, which I think is quite probable.
Did Josh pick Leeds, or did he pick Wolves?
I said Southampton, Leeds, and Wolves.
Oh, you did pick Wolves. Okay.
Yeah, just something
over different. Bournemouth. Is Bournemouth going to escape?
They did make some good signings, and they just picked up a point against Newcastle yesterday, which, you know, shows signs of improvement. I think, to be honest with you, they appointed Gary O'Neill as the permanent manager because he did do really well to earn them a good number of points. But I think they would have preferred to bring someone in and they just couldn't find the right person. That's kind of what it smells of to me because of how long they went without appointing him as permanent. Like, he was interim for basically up until the World Cup, I think, until they gave him the job on a permanent basis. And it seems to me like they just couldn't find someone that matched what they wanted. So,
yeah.
I don't know. All right, a couple other results. We already talked about the City and Villa game that happened today. This morning, another managerless team still leads in their rematch against Man United. Were unable to overcome them this time. I feel like in recent weeks, I've seen Man United play random teams from the bottom half of the Premier League. It feels like every other day. And it feels like Rashford scores in all of them. I don't know why, but it just, it's like because they played Forest twice because of the cup. And then they just, it's just so many random games that they've been playing, but
are they United fans happy?
Yeah, I don't hate United fans as much as you do, but
I just hate United as a concept.
Yeah, see, I don't hate them they're the team I hate the least out of the other big teams, but I am annoyed at the fact that they got Ten Hag and it actually worked because I wanted Spurs to get him so bad, and I think it would have worked there too. But anyway, are they in the title race? Question mark.
No.
I would say they're not 100% out of it, but I would say they're not in it either. I know they have two games. They've played two games more than Arsenal and one more than City, but
I think they're definitely competing for second.
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's like a non-zero chance that they win the Prem this season. I'll say that.
I feel like it's like when Arsenal stole second from you when we won the title, it just kind of feels, would you give me a second?
How did I just catch a stray round from that question?
Because it's the situation.
No, I totally get it, though. Like,
I feel like
whoever wins out of Arsenal and City, this other team is in trouble.
I don't necessarily think one is going to be significantly, like, I don't think Arsenal or City is going to be amazing. I think they're just going to be better than the other one. So I think both are going to drop points. Significantly more than they did the first half of the season. So I think that United are in a decent position to steal second from whoever flounders more. Because especially with how well Rashford is playing and how well the rest of the team has been playing around him specifically, I think they'll be in a really good position.
The thing I want to bring up is that, you know, I still think that they're, and I can see what Gage is saying, that it's a non-zero chance that they can still be in the title race. But the thing is that, and this is not necessarily a bad thing, it's just up to what happens beyond this. But they rely so heavily on some players, like Casemiro. And the example being in the Palace game, he got this fifth yellow or however many yellows it is now, and then missed the Arsenal game, and Arsenal beat them. And then we played them, and then Palace played them again after that game, and he got sent off with a red card, and they ended up drawing against Leeds. So it's just, you know, he's going to keep getting suspended, but like if he gets injured, then they're stuck with McFred again.
Yeah, it's not just him either. I think Rashford staying fit is really important. Lissandro Martinez staying fit is really important, because then you have to start Maguire, or you have to play Luke Shaw at center back.
Yeah, well, they played Maguire today. And actually, they did both of those things. They played Maguire and started Luke Shaw at center back.
They're so brave.
Yeah, I mean, because Malacia played left back, and Dallow, of course, is still retaining his place. But what I don't understand is, you just mentioned that they have to default to McFred if Casemiro's out, but they actually just decided not to do that and play Sabitzer in a holding role, which I think is not correct, because he, at Leipzig, at times, like, played as an auxiliary striker. I think he's definitely someone who's a more forward-thinking player and doesn't tend to elucidate those defensive characteristics as much. But so kind of a bizarre pairing of him and Fred in the midfield. Apparently it worked, but, you know, Leeds are not exactly a pristine example of what the Premier League has to offer. So,
and they're managerless.
And they're managerless, yeah. Maidenless. so... anyway, I think when was the last time Man United played a good team? That's my real question. I guess when Arsenal beat them weeks ago. Yeah. But
I was going to make some Palace joke, but I can't even say that we're a good team right now.
All right, gentlemen, I think we have covered pretty much everything that we need to cover. Of course, the Merseyside Derby is tomorrow, which means we won't be covering it as
we can just cover it right now. Everton won 4-0.
No, Everton won 1-0 off a corner.
Sean Dyche came on during a corner and scored a bicycle kick.
He did. Sean Dyche did score the goal.
Darwin Nunez got sent off. There you go.
He also missed bar four times.
Yeah. The real scoreline was 1-0, but it's 0-0 because Klopp said so.
Yeah, exactly. It's 100. That's 100% accurate. So you can just you can just leave that in.
They started a random youngster in midfield.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Most excellent. We'll have to see how many of those predictions come true. I'm sure it will be all of them. As we come to review it next week, which we probably won't. But if anything crazy does happen, we'll talk about it. We will, of course, definitely talk about the Arsenal City game because that's such a pivotal game in the hunt for the title for either team. And now we are going to move on to the album of the week, courtesy of Ethan.
Yeah, I've been going to the local record store a lot, even though my wallet does not like me doing that because I can't afford that right now. But I found this on sale, and I have reviewed or I've highlighted one of their albums before, but I found a Funkadelic record, One Nation Under Groove. One thing about these records is that they look fucking awesome. Like, look at that.
You could say, like, funking awesome.
Yeah.
It's very, very, like, comic book.
Yeah.
Type it's just art really style.
Cool. Let me open this and make sure. Okay, never mind. There's something inappropriate in the middle. But...
Yeah, One Nation Under Groove is such an excellent fucking album title too.
Yeah. And I was surprised to find out that it was not on Spotify. So I immediately thought I needed to have this in my collection because like that's the only reason or only way I can listen to it. I guess I can listen to it on YouTube, but that's no fun.
Yeah, that's cringe. I'm also going to shout out Reese during Album of the Week because you just picked up the Cowboy Bebop soundtrack on vinyl.
Yeah, he's joined the club.
I got it. It's very cool. It's got Faye on the front. I'm in love with her. End of story. There we go.
All right, Josh.
So this is my only MLB jersey. I got it this summer when I went to Busch Stadium in St. Louis. So it's kind of a cool story behind it. So they wear either this one or there's an off-white one that I wanted instead of this. It was like $400 because it was like the authentic one. So I got this one with Yadier Molina on the back, who was one of my favorite players growing up because we used to watch Cardinals all the time because they were a lot better back then. It's where I'm from. But every Sunday of the season, every Sunday home game, they wear the blue. And then every Sunday away game, they wear the off-white jersey. And then their normal jerseys are like red. There's a red one, a white one, and like a gray one. So
I used to like the Cardinals because they had Pujol or however you say the name.
Pujols. I love Pujols growing up too. When he left to go to the Angels, I was like extremely upset for like a week. And then
he's still playing.
No, he retired. He Molina and Wainwright all retired last season.
He's still playing.
He got to fourth on the third. He got pretty high up there on the all-time home run record last season, which was kind of cool to see. But yeah, this is probably not going to be the only MLB jersey for a while because that season will start in a little bit. And I was enjoying watching that last season. So,
all right. Most excellent. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me again. I must extend my most gracious thanks to the likes of Reese. Thank you for coming in, Reese.
Of course. Thanks for hosting once again.
You're welcome. Thanks to Ethan as well. It's good to have you back again.
It's always a pleasure.
And Josh as well. Thank you for coming and spouting some knowledge for us.
Thanks for having me. It's always a fun.
And happy Valentine's Day to you, the listener. You can be our collective Valentine. If you are listening right now, that's right. Just for this exclusive offer of $19.95, you can be our Valentine. No, but seriously, we hope you all do have a great week. We hope you enjoy Valentine's Day with your significant other if you are of that camp, or we hope you enjoy Tuesday with yourself if you are not, which is what I'll be doing. So yeah, great wishes to you all. What the hell is Josh?
You're enjoying Tuesday with yourself.
I am enjoying
Tuesday. What do you mean by that?
Oh, you won't be alone. You'll have Reese.
Oh, you're so right. Actually, we'll be together. How could I forget? Yeah. Let's end the show quick. Thanks for listening. We love you all. We hope you stay safe, stay healthy. It's a goodbye from us.